Once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat. My name is the V-Man. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes.
There were a number of fairly high-profile raids. The Ram raid was one. There was a raid in San Francisco, which ended up with the arrest of Ed Rosenthal, which, of course, became a pretty high-profile court case. Things seem to have quieted down a bit, although there have been a couple of smaller incidents, one in San Diego and some others in California.
Today on Rockin' the Boat, Bruce Merkin joins me in discussion on marijuana policy. He's the communications director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Today we'll talk about the U.S. House of Representatives vote, which allows the Bush administration's DEA to continue the policy of raiding and arresting ill patients and medical marijuana users. That's all coming up on Rockin' the Boat today, right after this week's Radio Spin from Laura Miller at PR Watch in Madison, Wisconsin. The PR Watch Radio Spin coming up here on Rockin' the Boat. Stay tuned.
With this week's edition of the Weekly Radio Spin, I'm Laura Miller. The new chief of U.S. Central Command, General John Abizaid, has issued a threat aimed at U.S. soldiers who complain publicly about the situation in Iraq. ABC News reports, some U.S. troops in Iraq have complained publicly about the uncertainty of when they are returning home. A group of soldiers aired their concerns on U.S. television on Wednesday, speaking of poor morale and disillusionment with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Abizaid said troops who criticized Rumsfeld in comments to reporters face possible verbal reprimand or something more stringent from their commanders. But Abizaid himself is contradicting Rumsfeld, who has refused to characterize the situation in Iraq as a guerrilla war. According to the general, U.S. forces are facing, quote, a classic guerrilla-type campaign against us. It's low-intensity conflict in our doctrinal terms, but it's war, however you describe it. According to George W. Bush, we gave Saddam a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. Bush uttered that amazing sentence recently to justify the war in Iraq, according to the Washington Post. Salon.com's Joe Connison comments, now a presidential statement so frontally at variance with the universally acknowledged facts obviously presents a problem for the White House press corps. There's no plausible explanation unless the president suddenly flashed back to his Yale sophomore philosophy seminar grappling with the argument that everything we perceive is mere illusion. Connison continues, for the moment, however, let's just assume reality does exist. What possessed the president to make an assertion that everyone on the planet knows to be untrue? And who is going to take responsibility for this one? Did George Tenet vet Bush's statement? Do the British have a secret dossier proving that Saddam never actually admitted Hans Blix and the UN MOVIC team? Will Condi Rice or Donald Rumsfeld show up on Fox News next weekend to explain why Bush's statement is technically accurate, even though he shouldn't have said it? As hard to explain as what Bush said is the press corps' failure to report his stunning gaffe, Connison writes. The U.S. State Department's new Arabic language magazine hits newsstands in the Middle East this week. Hi Magazine will dispel misinformation and misconceptions about the United States by focusing on similarities between American and Middle Eastern cultures with articles about lifestyle, technology, and health, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution writes. Tucker Eskew, White House Office of Global Communications Director, said during a recent visit to Atlanta, we're fighting a war of ideas as much as a war on terror. While denying that the magazine is propaganda, Eskew said Hi Magazine, which targets 18 to 35-year-olds, will promote American ideals and culture. Well, White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer ended his 2.5-year tenure as the president's top spokesperson. The man who New York Times' Elizabeth Buemiller wrote often displayed the charm of a cold glass of water behind the briefing room lectern looks forward to becoming a well-paid after-dinner speaker and starting his own Washington consulting firm Ari Fleischer Communications, that will advise corporate executives on handling the news media. The outgoing press secretary was notorious for dodging questions and thwarting aggressive White House reporters. Corporate crime reporter editor Russell McIver documented his interactions with Fleischer, including his last press conference, in his online CommonDreams.org feature, Ari and I. Fleischer's longtime deputy, Scott McClellan, will take over the press secretary duties. What do Osama bin Laden, the Detroit auto industry, and the White House have in common? They all use fear to manipulate the public. The UK's Guardian focuses on the propaganda uses of fear in an excerpt from Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq, the upcoming new book by PR Watch editors Sheldon Rampton and John Stauber. For these stories and more, visit PR Watch's website at www.prwatch.org.
And you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat. That's this week's PR Watch from Laura Miller at the Madison Independent Media Center. Stay tuned to Rockin' the Boat.
Staring at the boob tube, turning up the big knob, trying to find some life in this wasteland. Finally find a program, gonna deal with Mary Jane, ready for a trip into the headland. Obnoxious Joe comes on the screen, longer this gets them righteous sin. One more guy who doesn't count, his hair and his clothes are much too out. Well, pushing back his glasses, Sam says he was elected by the masses. That in mind, he starts to unwind, a vicious attack upon the grasses.
Don't step on the grass, Sam, government mule here on Rockin' the Boat. In the 1996 general elections, a majority of California voters enacted Proposition 215, known as the Compassionate Use Act. Prop 215 ensured the rights of seriously ill Californians to cultivate, obtain, and use marijuana with a physician's recommendation. Since that time, 11 other states have enacted similar provisions. Despite this, the federal government continues to ignore states' wishes and has aggressively pursued doctors, patients, and distributors of medical marijuana. In the early hours of September 5, 2002, several fully armed agents from the Drug Enforcement Administration raided the Davenport, California home of Valerie and Mike Corral, founders of WAM, the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. During the raid, agents forced a paraplegic woman off the couch at gunpoint, later using chainsaws to cut down more than 160 organically grown pot plants in the garden, while the Corrals were brought to the federal jail in San Jose. Agents seized the pot, as well as personal items including photographs, a laptop computer, three rifles, and the contact lists for WAM members. No charges have ever been filed against the Corrals. Earlier today, July 23, 2003, the United States House of Representatives voted to allow the Bush administration's DEA to continue this policy of raiding and arresting seriously ill patients and caregivers in states that allow the medical use of marijuana. Earlier in the day, I spoke with Bruce Merkin, Director of Communications for the Marijuana Policy Project, whose aim is to minimize the harm associated with marijuana consumption and the laws prohibiting its use. The Marijuana Policy Project hopes to make marijuana available to seriously ill people who have the approval of their doctors to use the drug. Bruce Merkin begins here by assessing the congressional action earlier today.
Today, actually last night, Congressman Maurice Hinchey of New York offered an amendment to an appropriations bill, a bill that would fund the Commerce and State and Justice Departments. And the amendment that he proposed would have barred the Justice Department and specifically the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, from using their funding to try to undermine or undo state medical marijuana laws, such as Californians, by doing the sort of things they've been doing, like conducting these outrageous raids against patients and caregivers. And while unfortunately the amendment lost today, it got a considerably larger number of votes than we've ever gotten on a positive vote on medical marijuana ever in the U.S. House. So it's sort of a good news, bad news situation. The bad news is that the House effectively approved continuing to raid and arrest and jail sick people. But slowly but surely, more and more folks from both parties are coming on to our side and realizing this sort of outrageous attack on the sick has got to stop.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about the work of the Marijuana Policy Project. I understand that you have 13,000 members nationwide and are basically the largest policy reform organization for marijuana laws in the United States, working to minimize harm associated with marijuana. Can you maybe give us a brief, like maybe expand on that? What do you encompass as your overall vision? I mean, do you just advocate for the decriminalization of medicinal marijuana or all marijuana?
Well, we look at the whole picture, and our basic approach is the idea of harm reduction, which is, of course, very common and well understood in Europe and sort of a foreign concept here in the U.S., where we seem to be wedded to punitive approaches to the whole issue of drugs. We simply think that laws should not do more harm than they prevent, and that marijuana, like alcohol, like any other substance that might cause some problems in some circumstances, should be approached from a pragmatic, common sense, what does the least harm point of view. And clearly, prohibition, jailing people, putting them, you know, in prison, does vastly more harm than marijuana itself does, except when used irresponsibly. And we certainly think that there is a role for the law in preventing people from driving dangerously while they're under the influence or anything that puts people at risk. But at this point, it's very clear that marijuana prohibition in general is a dismal, catastrophic failure. We put a lot of our effort on the medical issue just because that's such a desperate and obvious humanitarian need. I mean, there is just no sense in having DEA agents pointing automatic weapons at disabled people to take away their medicine. I mean, that's just sick, and it's got to stop.
In your view, how does marijuana stack up to some of those legal drugs that you mentioned, maybe like caffeine, nicotine, and alcohol, in terms of risk, in terms of the user, the casual user of any of those? How does marijuana compare?
Well, you know, when you look at the data objectively, what you can't help but conclude is that marijuana is actually pretty far down on the risk scale. This is a drug that has never caused a fatal overdose that's been recorded in the medical literature. That's pretty amazing. You can OD quite easily on bourbon or gin, or on aspirin or Tylenol, but it is physically impossible to smoke enough marijuana to fatally OD. We know that in the area of dependence or addiction, as it's commonly referred to, a higher percentage of alcohol users or of cigarette smokers become addicted than marijuana users do. In other words, alcohol, which is legal, is more addictive than marijuana. So by any rational, factual analysis, this is a drug that is simply does not rate the hysteria and the severe criminal penalties that we give to it, particularly on the federal level. Now, that's not to say that marijuana is harmless. You know, no drug is harmless, and particularly if you use it carelessly or irresponsibly, you can do yourself some injury. And we certainly advocate responsible behavior. But jailing peaceful, law-abiding marijuana users, particularly sick folks who are using it to try and get some relief from pain or nausea, is just not a policy that does any good for anybody.
I don't usually watch much TV myself, but lately
you haven't missed much.
That's true. I've been seeing a series of ads, though, running when I do happen to catch some television broadcasting, and these ad campaigns are sort of targeting sort of the casual marijuana user. They show there's one that shows like a man at a roadside memorial, and apparently he like caused a car accident, and I guess his brother was killed in this particular commercial, and he was smoking pot. Then there's another one with a young kid who finds a wallet in the laundry, and it turns out it's his older brother's who did nothing with his life but smoke pot in the basement and watch TV, coincidentally. So I'm curious what you think about this ad campaign. Is there any truth to this, or is this just a fear-mongering tactic being used by the Bush administration?
Well, you know, I mean, it certainly is a fear-mongering tactic. And what they've done a lot of the time is present things that might happen very rarely and treated them as if they happen to everybody or if they happen all the time. You know, the idea of the person who's stoned and sort of, you know, wastes their life away is what's commonly referred to as amotivational syndrome, which is something that the marijuana has been accused of causing. And the scientific evidence really is pretty clear now that there just is no such thing, that this is not a normal or typical effect of marijuana use. Now, there are a few people with any intoxicating substance who will use it to excess and, you know, do it in a destructive way. People do that with alcohol. People do it with lots of things. But to use this as a justification to keep something illegal just doesn't make any sense.
I'm speaking today with Bruce Merkin. He's Director of Communications for the Marijuana Policy Project, the largest marijuana policy reform organization in the U.S., who work to minimize the harm associated with marijuana. Bruce, we've talked a little bit about some of the negative sides. Maybe we can talk about the benefits of using marijuana. What are some of its medicinal values and some of the other values that it may have for people, such as stress relief? I've heard of a number of things that it does that are of benefit, so maybe you can touch on that.
Right. Well, you know, there's a growing body of evidence now that shows that marijuana's active components, which are chemicals known as cannabinoids, are extremely effective in relieving certain kinds of pain. In fact, there was an article in the medical journal The Lancet Neurology just in May, which said flat out that these active components relieve pain in virtually every experimental test that scientists have set up to measure pain relief. There's also quite a bit of evidence that it's effective in relieving nausea and appetite loss, as well as some of the symptoms, muscle spasms and what have you, caused by multiple sclerosis and certain other neurological conditions. So this is something that is very useful for a number of really sick people for whom there aren't very good standard treatments, or for whom the standard medical treatments just don't work, because not every drug works for everybody. And so we have people, sometimes very ill people, like I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the clients of WHAM in Santa Cruz, of whom I think 85% are terminally ill with cancer or AIDS or other terrible illnesses, who are able to get some relief from some of these very debilitating systems from marijuana when nothing else works.
In fact, 14 WHAM patients have since deceased the raid conducted by the DEA of September 5th, 2002, just about a year ago. Maybe you can give us an idea of how often medical marijuana distributors are being raided. Is this becoming more frequent under the Bush administration over the last couple of years?
Well, it's been somewhat hit and miss. There certainly was a fairly sharp increase in activity in 2002. There were a number of fairly high-profile raids. The WHAM raid, was one. There was a raid in San Francisco, which ended up with the arrest of Ed Rosenthal, which of course became a pretty high-profile court case. Things seem to have quieted down a bit, although there have been a couple of smaller incidents, one in San Diego and some others in California. But I think there was, frankly, so much bad publicity, particularly out of the WHAM raid, that they've become a little bit more cautious. But still, you've got seriously ill people and their caregivers living under the gun, never knowing when the long arm of the law is going to come down on them and try and haul them off to jail for simply trying to get a little relief from their pain.
And the House vote today sort of gives tacit approval to that policy.
Indeed it does. And, you know, it is still the policy of the United States government that it doesn't matter if you're sick, it doesn't matter if you have cancer, it doesn't matter if you have AIDS, it doesn't matter if this is the only thing that makes your life bearable. If we catch you, we're going to arrest you and haul you off to jail. And I got to say, that's just depraved. On the good side is, you know, the last time there was a vote on the House floor on a medical marijuana issue, the bad guys won 311 to 94. So to go from 94 votes to 152 is major progress. And we've had a number of California representatives who have been missing in action until now, including several Democrats, Lucille Roy Ballard from Los Angeles, and Republican Mary Bono of Palm Springs, among others, who voted with us this time, voted to protect patients who haven't done anything before. So bit by bit, we're making progress, but we're not there yet.
How does our representative, 17th Congressional Representative Sam Farr, how does he stack up on these issues? Does he consistently vote for medical marijuana?
Farr has been one of the handful of members who've truly been leaders in trying to protect patients, and he deserves a great deal of credit. He spoke last night during the House debate in favor of this amendment today and, of course, voted for it. He introduced a measure a couple of months ago called the Truth in Trials Act, which, if it's enacted, would prevent the sort of travesty that happened to Ed Rosenthal, where a person can be convicted on marijuana charges without the jury even being able to hear that it was for medical use. So Farr has really been one of the good guys, and there's a handful of them, Maurice Hinchey, who introduced this amendment, Dana Rohrabacher, a conservative Republican from Southern California, who's not the sort of person whose politics you would immediately expect to be on our side. But he spoke very eloquently last night of his mother's terminal illness and how she suffered in her last days. And he got very emotional on the House floor talking about the need to let people have relief. And, you know, slowly but surely, people are coming over.
It's good to hear Sam Farr on the right side for change. We have some issues with some of his other positions and policies, but that's for another show. I'm speaking with Bruce Merkin, Director of Communications for the Marijuana Policy Project. He's joining me on Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, www.freakradio.org. I just have a couple more questions, Bruce Merkin.
Sure.
I understand there's big changes in Canada's marijuana policy. A couple of months ago, the Canadian government introduced a bill that decriminalized possession of small amounts of marijuana, and just 2 weeks ago, Canada announced that it will provide medicinal marijuana on a regular basis to several hundred people who need the drug for their illnesses. This decision was forced after a Canadian Superior Court ruled that federal marijuana access regulations were unconstitutional. Can U.S. lawmakers look north for a more sensible approach? And what else can you say about what's happening in Canada?
Well, at least in Canada, there are glimmers of common sense. Unfortunately, we've got a government up there that seems to be a rather muddled and unclear about what it really wants to do. What's been encouraging is that the courts in Canada have pretty consistently held that Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, their equivalent of our Bill of Rights, says you can't deny people relief from pain and suffering if marijuana is needed to provide that. And the courts have basically pushed the government towards some of these reforms. The government has been distinctly muddled about what they're going to do. They're talking about distributing marijuana to qualified patients, which is a good thing, except they're going to do it and hand them a brochure that says, oh, and don't smoke this stuff. So they're a bit muddled in their thinking there. Nevertheless, they're at least at the beginning stages of having an intelligent and less emotional discussion about what to do about marijuana policy. And we haven't caught quite to that stage in this country yet. They're at least a couple steps ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. How many people in the United States are incarcerated for minor marijuana possessions and other related charges?
You know, it's hard to get exact figures because most states don't break down the stats on their inmate populations by the exact offense.
Right.
But estimates that I've seen range between 70 and 100,000 who are incarcerated at any given moment on marijuana charges. What's interesting is that nearly half of all drug arrests in this country, over 700,000 a year for the last 2 years, are on marijuana charges. 89% of those are simple possession. And even if the person doesn't ultimately get sentenced to prison, you're still arrested, handcuffed, booked, probably spending a night or two in jail, running up maybe thousands of dollars in lawyers' fees. It's a if you've ever been arrested, it's a really traumatic experience. And there is absolutely no evidence that this actually does what it's supposed to do, which is curb people from using the stuff.
And then maybe finally give us your forecast. Karen Tandy has been nominated to be the new administrator for the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. Tell us about who she is, and should medical marijuana users and other marijuana users feel threatened if she is confirmed?
Medical marijuana users and folks who favor a rational drug policy in general should be scared to death of Karen Tandy, who probably will be confirmed, unfortunately. She is a longtime drug war apparatchik. She was asked written questions by several members of the Senate Judiciary Committee about medical marijuana. She amazingly claimed that there's no evidence of marijuana's medical value, while also acknowledging that she'd never read the key documents that document that evidence, such as the Institute of Medicine report issued in 1999. So this is a person who's going to be running our anti-drug efforts who basically doesn't know and doesn't want to know.
Well, that doesn't bode well. Hate to end on a sad note. Maybe you can give our listeners some ideas for action and places to get more information on marijuana policy.
Sure. I mean, a good place to start is our website, which is marijuanapolicy.org. And you could sign up and get free email updates. And we send out alerts regularly when there's legislation pending that's of importance. Our members have been bombarded with email, you know, about this Hinchey Amendment recently. And, you know, please look us up on the web. Again, that's marijuanapolicy.org. And when in doubt, call your member of Congress, call your senators, call Dianne Feinstein, call Barbara Boxer. And even Sam Farr, although he's generally on the right side on the medical marijuana issues, you know, people like that need to be thanked. They need to know that their constituents appreciate what they're doing.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Bruce Merkin, I appreciate your time today. You're the communications director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Once again, marijuanapolicy.org. Thanks for joining me on Rockin' the Boat.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Oh, shit. Oh, I guess that's going to wrap it up for us for another edition of Rockin' the Boat. Smoke it if you got it. Tune in again tomorrow at 5:30 to 6 o'clock. Freakradio.org, 96.3 FM.
Decriminalized? I think that marijuana should be legalized.
That should be legal.
I don't like it. Not at all.
Marijuana should be legal.
Legalization of marijuana is underway. There's a lot of good to be reaped.